The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
It is the exciting return of the Answer of the Week. My name is Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. Across from me is the head questioner, Mr. Joe Patrick. Say hello, Joe Patrick.
Hello.
Every Sunday, Joe Patrick posts the question of the week on the Two-Headed Nerd forums. From there, you can go there and respond, write whatever you want for as long as you want, or you can email us your two-minute answer using MP3 technology specifically, or you can call us at 402-819-4893. It is still very important that you share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes. I will cut you off. Joe Patrick, please remind me, what was the question these nerds are responding to?
This week's question was inspired by Harvey Locust, who had a birthday on Friday the 13th.
This was very Friday the 13th specific.
He asked, who do we think is the unluckiest character in comics?
Okay. I love it. But before we get into their answers, let's introduce the cocktail of the week.
Yes.
This week's cocktail is inspired by the Dark and Stormy. It's a rum drink made with ginger
AKA
beer.
AKA the Queen of Wakanda.
Well, we changed the Dark and Stormy, and now we're calling it the Queen of Wakanda, after our favorite ex-princess, Storm, if you will.
She's the queen.
Well, ex-queen.
She ain't no princess, she's the queen.
Technically, she's the ex-ex-queen, because they got...
She's the ex-ex-queen.
They got divorced.
Yeah.
What it is 1.5 ounces dark rum.
The Kraken.
2 ounces dark rum. We're using the Kraken. 1 ounce... of Kahlua, which is a dark rum with coffee, then topped with ginger beer, finished a little Angostura bitters. Stir and serve.
Chin, chin.
Chin, chin. That is delightful. Holy crap.
It's pretty good.
My God. Let's get right into it.
Hachi machi.
With our first call. Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn, father of, what was his son's name?
I don't remember. Ollie?
Ollie?
Yeah.
Father of Oliver from Brooklyn.
Sup, nerds. Anthony currently from Brooklyn here. And I got to think that the unluckiest character in comics is Detective Martin Soap from Garth Ennis's The Punisher, as drawn by Steve Dillon. This guy, when he was born, was quickly dropped on his head by a nurse. His mother abandons him at an orphanage where he is raised in a horrible climate where he's bullied and abused by the orphans and the staff. He eventually becomes a cop, and like nothing works out for this guy. Like the world is conspiring against him. Like a judge that presided over his cases is declared insane, so the cases are tossed out the window. A jury is high on ecstasy, so that gets tossed out. But even when he finagles his way into good fortune, like he blackmails his way into becoming the commissioner. And he's all excited, basking in the glow of his victory, and a bird promptly craps on his head. And he's not commissioner for long, because pictures of him soliciting prostitute service and he loses the job and gets demoted. But the worst bit of luck for this guy, the worst, and it's horrifying. He's not only unlucky at his job, he's unlucky in love. And he's at a bar one night and he meets a sad older woman, and they both, you know, find comfort in each other's sadness and go home to bed together. And it is heavily, heavily, heavily implied that that woman was his long lost mother.
Yep. And not implied.
Yeah. That's got to make you the unluckiest guy in comics ever. As only Garth Ennis could write. But anyway, that is my submission. Thank you. And goodbye.
That's a really great answer.
Yeah. I don't know if we are going to come up with anyone unluckier than that.
Well, I heard Anthony, I saw Anthony talking about Garth Ennis on the forums regarding this question. And I got real worried that he was going to take my answer, but he didn't.
Oh,
so there's okay. A little foreshadowing okay. For you guys.
Detective Soap. That's a good one. Thank you very much for your call, Anthony. Appreciate you leaving your drunk kid out of it this week. Let's go to the voicemail. Oh, it's Ian the Villain. We haven't heard from Ian for a while. Miss this guy.
Hey, Joe and Matt. This is Ian the Villain calling in to answer the question of the week. I believe it's the unluckiest character or moment in a comic book. And right when I heard you guys ask that, the first thing that popped into my head was an old X-Factor, I think it was, issue I read back in the day with this D-list villain. I believe his name was Number One Fan, and he was a mad scientist, and his big project was he turned his two hands into propellers. I believe he cut his hands off somehow and was attached propellers to the end of them as his weapon. But he was in some sort of laboratory in like a skyscraper or something, because he had to get out with an elevator, and because he replaced his hands with fans, he couldn't press the elevator button to get out, and he went to slap his head out of stupidity, and again, he had propellers for hands, so he ended up decapitating himself or something, I believe. I know that's like how he died, and he was somehow resurrected to fight them with like Parnasaur and some other villain. I don't know. That one just always stuck out to me. It was so stupid. And it's almost pointless to a point. And that just seemed unlucky character and moment for me. Just popped in my head. So hope that works out. Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy the show. Have a good one.
I vaguely remember Number One Fan. Okay, I remember him now. I had to look him up. Rick Chalker, this is according to the Marvel Wiki, was a brother of mutant hater Vic Chalker.
Sure, yeah.
Really uncreative parents, apparently. He wished to avenge his brother's death, so he replaced his arms with blades when he realized he couldn't even open doors anymore, let alone use a phone or leave his own island. He tried to slap himself in the head, only to cut up his own face on accident. He also has a cousin, Dick Chalker, a.k.a. Carnivore, who swore to avenge them, only to be hit soon after by a car. This is a very unlucky family.
Wait, hold on now. Was this Peter David's run?
Because
I don't remember this at all.
Let's see. Originally appeared in X-Factor 83.
That's, yeah, Peter David then.
Peter David's run. Peter David injecting a little bit of humor into the story, I would say. I think you could make an argument for dumbest villain. Like, you didn't realize you might need to use your f***ing hands again? Really?
Okay, yeah. see also Razor Fist.
Yep.
That dude's got two swords instead of hands. He can't wipe his own ass.
No. Smooth move, Razor Fist. Thank you for your call, Ian. That truly an unlucky villain. Truly a stupid villain as well.
Vic Chalker, Dick Chalker, Rick Chalker.
Yeah. Are you talking about the Earth 616 Chalkers? Randy Andrews was sweet enough to respond to last week's question, which we told him not to, but he doesn't care. You can't contain this guy.
No,
you cannot contain it.
Puts Randy in a corner.
I'll put a link to his answer with last week's question on the forums, just in case you guys want to hear it. Right now, let's get to his unlucky character.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week.
Spider-Man.
This week you asked, who do we think is the unluckiest character in comics? Well, guys, I feel that Spider-Man is the unluckiest. Here are my reasons.
I don't think this is Raimi's Spider-Man. I think this is Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man.
Every time some villain finds out that he has a girlfriend, that has to be ruined or she gets killed. He's surrounded by death at every turn. Even people in his own life have suffered because of our dear old Peter. Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy, Aunt May, and even, of course, Uncle Ben. Well, that's it this week, guys. Hope you liked it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackally.net.
It is Raimi Spider-Man.
And my music this week is the Spider-Man theme by Danny Elfman.
Yeah,
yep.
Because it sounded
exactly like
Bye
Batman.
For now.
That was the first thing I thought of when we were at the Spider-Man movies. Like, this sounds just like Batman.
Yep. Spidey. It's a great answer.
A classic answer. Perhaps the most obvious answer.
Truly.
But you know what? He's the first one to say it. So points to Randy.
Right. Nice job, Randy. Let's go to Jim Kettner, our very own Kettner.
This drink is an unusual shade of brown.
To be fair, it's black.
This is brown, but
it's caramel, just like Miss Aurora Monroe's skin.
That's going to be very loud.
Hey, Joe and Matt. Kendrick here answering your question of the week. Now, the timeless answer to this has got to be Peter Parker. I mean, Spider-Man is practically the patron saint of the hard luck superhero. But when you take into account the fact that he's currently the CEO of a multinational corporation who was once married to a supermodel, it's tough to cite the old Parker luck with a straight face. Never mind that for all the other crap that Spidey's had to deal with, he's always been a pretty competent superhero who at least has the respect of other heroes, if not J. Jonah Jameson. This isn't true, however, of every bug-themed superhero, and almost no character in all of comics has gotten as much of a raw deal as Ted Kord. That's right, the Blue Beetle.
Okay.
This guy had all the bumbling social blunders of Spidey. Dude couldn't get a date. His best friend was an egotistical a-hole. And guy even had trouble fitting into his super suit. His heroic career barely got any respect, even from other people on his team. On top of all that, his dickhead ex-boss murdered him. So yeah, unluckiest character. I think Ted Kord deserves the title. Spidey can have it back as soon as JJ shoots him in the f***ing head. If you want to hear more from me, please check out my podcast Galacticus on iTunes. Or head over to Kettner.com and check out my comics and illustrations. Thanks, guys.
It's a very fair argument. It's a very fair argument. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, Spider-Man, you lost your job? F*** you, I got shot in the head.
I do love Ted Kord, and I miss him every day.
I also love Ted Kord.
I miss him every day.
And it really is sad what they ultimately did with that character. Like, what a shitty way for him to go. Ted Kord was a beloved, sweet, sort of a bit bumbling character, but... You know, like, and it was right after my favorite Ted Kord is when he was dating Oracle briefly in the pages of Birds of Prey.
Sure. Yeah.
Way back. It was so sweet because she was just like, oh, he's totally not like anyone I've ever dated. He's just like kind of a chubby nerd. And he was so sweet.
Yeah.
He really got a raw deal. DC was like, oh, he is sweet. Let's shoot him in the fucking head. And now up to the snowy wilds of Maine to visit one of our favorite love slaves, Da Orca.
Well, getting cold up here in Maine. We have a slogan here on a bunch of our signs to say Maine, the way life should be. What they should say is Maine, the way life should be for the 10 days beginning September 7th after the Flatlanders have gone home, but they're still warm enough to go outside. Whoever came up with that slogan must go south for the winter. I would too if not for being under house arrest. Apparently a podcast can be used as legal confession. And some of the things I copped to last week got the local law dog's attention. I guess your audience in our frozen state extends beyond one cranky old asshole. The wrong answer to this question is Spider-Man. Sorry, but if your bitchy high school girlfriend who won't put out dies, and you replace her with a supermodel who gives out rusty trombones like a real estate agent gives out business cards, life can't be all that bad.
That's a good point.
I could get behind Daredevil, but I'll leave him for that cab driver who always calls in all breathy on his Bluetooth while he's tooling around late at night with his window cracked looking for discount hookers. He loves his Daredevil, and I love listening to him lose his train of thought as he navigates the labyrinth of one-way streets in downtown Omaha.
I'll let you guess who it is.
My answer is Splinter. Give me some leeway here. Old Ratface has like 16 different origins now.
Huh.
And with all due respect to fellow Mainer Kevin Eastman, I'm referring to the version of Splinter that was a ninja, then self-exiled himself to the New York sewer system. Then got turned into a rat when he got a little toxic gunk on him. First of all, who chooses a f***ing sewer? Isn't that the last place you'd choose on Earth? I'd rather live in Kosovo than a sewer. One of my fishing buddies works down to the water treatment plant, and that gets in your pores.
Orca, just for your information, we listened to that entire call, and the entire last minute is unusable.
It was hilarious, but unfortunately, it went over 2 minutes.
Yeah. So. Splinter, I think he made an interesting point. I will say that I hate the versions of Splinter where he was actually a rat that became a smarter, taller rat.
Yeah, that's dumb. It's just dumb.
I think that's his original origin.
Yeah. No, the original origin was he was a dude and he got mutated.
See, I thought the cartoon added the part about him being human first and being like comrades with Shredder.
No, I'm pretty sure he was like human ninja
guy. That's the Splinter that I like.
Yeah, because he had ties to Shredder.
Right.
And Shredder figured out he was Oroku Saki or whatever.
Whichever one.
Yeah.
One of them's Oroku Saki.
Yeah, one of them's
Hamato Yoshi is the other one.
Rocky Saki, I don't know.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, interesting call. Splinter? Point well made.
Splinter? Pretty unlucky dude.
Yeah. He's like disgraced.
Yeah.
Disgraced ninja, lives in a sewer, gets turned into a rat for his trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
Sorry, bro.
And now he's got to deal with four adult-sized turtles.
Yeah. Three of which sound like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Let's go to the beautiful, we'll go all the way across the United States where the weather's a little nicer.
3,000 miles away from the orca.
I mean, maybe more. It could be like 50,000 miles.
Yeah, for all we know.
I don't know. The U.S. is big. Let me tell you.
So
all the way across the United States to Oregon. Aaron Myers sitting on the dock eating some oysters. Let's see what he's got for us.
Hey guys, it's Aaron Myers, THN Love Slave, calling in with my answer. Sorry, there was a car driving past me. I wasn't listening to the car. I'm gonna hop out.
Okay.
I was really hoping for something more comical to happen. I saw that. I saw two calls. I thought the first one would end comically.
Maybe I'll edit in like a car accident. Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's a car driving back.
Hey, guys, it's Aaron Myers, THN Love Slave, calling in with my answer. This is kind of a tough one, I had to think. And the only thing that really popped into my mind, first off, was a character called Fourbrush Man. Yeah. Who was created by Stan Lee as sort of the symbolic whipping boy of a Marvel employees turned into some sort of superhero character in the pages of Not Gran number one. And Stan liked to use him as the example of how he would mistreat and bully around anyone in the Marvel bullpen or, you know, down to the mailing room. And so he would be used as that foil, from what I remember. So that's the guy who came to mind first off, and that's my answer. So deal with it. Talk to you later. Bye.
Forbish man, very unlucky guy.
Don't threaten me, Aaron.
He wore a pot on his head with eyes cut out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was fat, a little yellow suit, cape.
No, it was a red suit and a blue cape. It was like red pajamas, like the kind with the butt that comes out.
Yep. Funny story. Back in the day, I am at the Kansas City Club Show. Working for a comic shop. We have our booth set up, bunch of back issues. Mark Wade comes to the booth, buys an entire run of Not Brand Ack.
That's fun. Was it the club show or was it Planet Comic Con?
I believe it was the club show.
Okay.
At the time. There was like a war between the club show and Planet Comic Con. It was all bull.
Horrible.
You know, comic shop owners, they are like
a bunch of petty bitches.
Seriously, it's worse than like biker gangs. Like, you know, they just don't have the balls to shoot each other. That's all. And they'll get in fights for anything. Great call, Aaron. I hope you're okay after the car accident. You know, next time, don't call us from the car. Bad idea.
It was Planet Comic Con where I had a lot of adventures at Planet Comic Con. The first was my darkest comic book confession where I lied to Dwayne McDuffie and got caught. And the other one was where comic book legend Julius Schwartz sat across from me for the entire weekend. And the one thing he said to me was, you spelled your name wrong. You should have spelled comics with a K.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, I guess.
Julie. R.I.P.
R.I.P. for sure.
We lost him too soon.
R.I.P. No, he was super old.
We lost him too late.
Yeah.
Let's go to D. Murray.
He should have died way earlier.
How's it going, guys? D here. My answer of the week for you is going to be, I thought long and hard about this one, actually. It was a tie between Daredevil and Winter Soldier. And I went with the Winter Soldier only because he's missing a limb. And he's like in space right now, right? He's the new Nick Fury?
Something. Yeah. I don't know.
The man on the
Definitely
wall.
The most unluckiest character ever. Frozen for like 70 years, going off killing random people. Ugh, that's gotta freaking suck. But yeah, that's my answer, man. Winter Soldier. Take it easy.
D's right.
Short and sweet.
Bucky Barnes, you got a raw deal. That's some unlucky.
I mean,
business.
I bet he's very happy that he's alive now.
I suppose.
Dead in a frozen river in Germany somewhere.
And as much as I like the really bizarre Winter Soldier comic that was going on before whatever's going to be relaunched with him, I need Bucky Barnes on Earth.
Yeah, I miss the spy.
Yeah, Bucky. It just doesn't make sense. I like the idea of the man on the wall and stuff like that. That's pretty cool.
But you know what? No.
I don't need it to be him.
I am not giving any credit to Original Sin, that piece of shit.
That was not good.
That ruined Nick Fury.
Yeah. Well, it didn't ruin Nick Fury.
No, it ruined Nick Fury.
It was silly.
At the end of it, they strongly imply that he has been transformed into some sort of cosmic monster.
Sort of.
Yeah. No. No good.
Yeah. But I just, you know.
Though I did enjoy what I read of the Winter Soldier comic where he was fighting in space.
It's an amazing book and beautiful to look at.
But it's a complete mismatch for that character.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Let's go to Harvey Locust.
Hey nerds, Locust here, MP3-ing my answer to the question of the week, and I will be surprised if I'm the only one who answers with the Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
It's Ted Malcolm in the background.
we've already talked about my favorite moment before, back in June of 14, when we did the best brawls, and I talked about Spider-Man versus Wolverine, where Spider-Man accidentally kills the girl he's trying to stop Wolverine from killing, even though she wants him to kill her.
It's a tangled web.
The whole thing. But
what actually made me think of this question was I was reading Spider-Man 126 from November 1973. Yeah, that's the year I was born. You can do the math, figure that one out. Yeah, he's
60 years old.
And the kangaroo had just hooked up with this doctor guy who did a surgery on him to enhance his powers. And this doctor wants him to steal this radioactive isotope, right? So he has to break into this secret lab somewhere, like in Philadelphia or something. And of course, Spider-Man shows up to fight him, stop him, tries to tell the guy, the kangaroo, that, hey, this is, you know, not the greatest idea. This stuff is dangerous. It'll kill you. He, bullheaded, doesn't listen, opens up the door, and is instantly vaporized. And of course, the cops show up.
I remember that from the handbook.
And think Spider-Man did it.
Philadelphia,
think
unluckiest
Spider-Man's
city in the world.
Breaking into the place, you know, it's that's just the way Peter Parker always had it, and that's why I felt he's the unluckiest character in comics. Thanks, guys.
What we learned from that Spider-Man comic? Stay out of Philadelphia. It is an right. Unlucky place.
Yeah, yeah. It's bad.
Another answer for Spider-Man. I like it.
Harvey, happy belated birthday.
Oh, listen to this. I think we have a first-time caller.
I think we do.
Scott Brown. He says, hello, gentlemen. My good friend and co-host, Ket Nerd. So it kind of doesn't count because Ket Nerd's been there for a while. But thank you, Ket Nerd, for forcing the show on someone.
What do you mean it doesn't count?
He recommended I listen to your podcast, and it's been a real treat and inspiration since I started listening. Thought I'd add my 2 cents on unlucky characters. I tried to keep it under 2 minutes. I may have gone over by 10 seconds. Don't worry. I'll take care of that, Scott. Welcome aboard.
You're really going to fiddle with 10 seconds.
I am.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Scott from the Galacticus podcast.
Listen to this guy's voice.
He sounds sending in a
just like Doc Flux
for the question of the week. Who's the unluckiest superhero character or comic book character? I am going to go with Matt Murdock, Daredevil himself, because despite all of his great abilities and kind of an awesome comics he's part of, he seems to be one of the unluckiest characters I can come across. His origin itself starts with him being blinded by a terrible accident as he's trying to be a good Samaritan and save someone on the street. He'll never see a movie again. He'll never be able to look at a photograph. Now he's got the great ability to smell every discreet fart that someone tries to hide, to taste every trace piece of feces on a meal he eats out. He can hear every horrible, awkward sound of his, you know, his neighbors having sex around him, perhaps. Ew. Or just any, you know, someone playing the Baja Men's Who Let the Dogs Out.
Even worse.
That's going to be part of his life. And there's very little he can do to escape it. But even besides that, the fact that his origin involves the death of his father being murdered, his single father being murdered by the organized crime for throwing a fight. The fact that he's had not one, but two girlfriends murdered by the same guy. The fact that girlfriends became a heroin addict when they broke up, also became a adult movie actress who ended up selling his identity, which ended up with the blowing up of his apartment and the slowly driving him crazy, right down to the part where he went to prison and had his best friend get stabbed in front of him. I think Matt Murdock's had the toughest just series of breaks of any character, and ironically for a character who seems to get lucky.
Okay, Matt Murdock, it is hard.
Did you really just stop his call? Yeah.
Rules are rules. We cut the orc off too. Rules are rules. Everybody's treated the same. There are no very important people here. They're all VIPs. Huh? There you go. I think it is an easy argument. Daredevil, way unluckier than Spider-Man. Spider-Man says wrong. Daredevil, I don't think he's ever had anything go right. Ever. And then Brian Michael Bendis took him over. It got worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. It's rough out there.
Man. Scott, welcome aboard. So good to hear your voice. Scott is also on the Galactus podcast with Ket Nerd. Check it out. It's a great show. I really like it. Got a picture of Scott. Good looking guy.
I don't know. He's making a weird face.
And man, that voice. Made for radio.
It sounded kind of like Doc Flux.
Like a soft bass to him. Let's go back to the voicemail. Hey, I was just thinking about Danny the other day. I was like, we pissed that kid off. He's gone.
No, somebody was talking. Somebody said, I think it was on Periscope, maybe, that they missed Danny. It's like, Danny called. He just called back.
All right. Danny's back.
Hey, guys. It's Danny calling in for the answer of the week. It's been a long time, I know, but school got in the way.
School's anyway, for losers, Danny.
The unluckiest comic book character would have to be Odie from Garfield.
Stay in school, Danny.
I mean, this poor thing doesn't even know what's going on. It's always being kicked around by his somewhat brother or stepbrother or something. And it's just terrible for him. Even in the cartoon series, he just gets kicked off of tables and his food stolen. And on another note, I think the funniest unlucky instance is probably Kenny from South Park. How he's always miraculously getting killed either by a bazooka from a peaked wrestler or just falling into a tunnel of sharks or something. It's just crazy. All right, guys. See you later. Bye.
Curse you, Danny, sneaking in two answers. But I miss you, so it counts. Odie from Garfield.
Yeah, man. I'm going to beg to differ.
Just in the sense that Odie is so dumb that he doesn't realize how unlucky he is. Like, he's blissfully ignorant. He is unlucky. But I'm saying Odie doesn't know it.
Well, but that doesn't mean he's not unlucky.
No. He's just blessed with the fact that he's an idiot.
I mean, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Look, I love that answer. It's outside the box. Everyone else is like, Spider-Man, Daredevil, whatever. And Danny's like, Odie.
Garfield.
No fear.
Is a total shithead to Odie.
Yeah.
It really is. And if you look at those, like, there's those Garfield comics online where they took out all of Garfield's
Garfield
lines.
Minus Garfield.
Garfield
yeah.
minus Garfield. And it's just Garfield being a shithead to John and being a
I mean, the point of Garfield minus Garfield is to
make witness, John look crazy,
is to witness the crushing existential grief of John.
John might be even unluckier than Odie. He lives with both of these. He lives with an asshole and a moron. He can never hold together a relationship. He talks to his pets. I think John is unluckier than Odie.
I think John just got mental problems. I think
John is borderline suicidal for most of the strip.
Welcome back, Danny. We did miss you.
Good to hear from you, buddy. But right now, it's Toots time.
Well, first order of business is to wish Mr. Harvey Locus a happy birthday from Toots. from one Scorpio to another, I sure hope your Friday the 13th birthday was lucky and not bad luck.
E.
Buddy. Bro. Okay.
I hope it was lucky and not bad
luck. My answer to this question might be a bit of a stretch, but it's my answer. So, my favorite moment of luck in comics, be it good, be it bad, has to revolve around a character whose whole power set is based on luck. And that would be Longshot of the X-Men. Now, he's not a mutant, right? Like, he came from the Mojoverse and, like, was engineered and stuff. So he's not, like, a mutant. I don't really know what he is.
Technically, he's a mutant.
But, yeah.
No.
He's lucky.
Genetically engineered.
But
he's not a mutant.
Here's the thing.
Born with his powers.
The moment I'm going with.
He wasn't born at all.
We'll argue.
The Longshot limited series, which was, I believe, six issues, ran from 1985 to 1986, with a supersized final issue. Written by Ann Nocenti and drawn by Arthur Adams, who, man, is a powerhouse. I love that limited series so much. And the whole thing with the luck is, although Longshot is very lucky, the lives that he touches throughout the series, man, those guys, bad luck happens to all those people. So I suggest you should read it. It's really good. Man, those 80s limited series were so great. Anyways, I hope that answer works because, you know, I have hope. I got to go play D&D.
Okay, I'm counting it.
So he's saying, like, Longshot himself,
lucky guy,
enjoys great good fortune, but
everyone around him,
they suffer in his presence.
He's like the cooler that they bring in Vegas, where it's like, and this is real. People are kicking ass in cards or whatever, and they would bring in the cooler. And the cooler is an unlucky guy that sits next to you and screws up your card luck. They really used to do this. There's a William H. Macy about. William H. Macy about it. So everyone whose lives at Longshot touched. I like that answer. It's way out of the box.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go so far as to declare that my favorite call.
Well, we're not done yet.
We are done yet.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
Are we done yet?
The next call is Anthony wishing you a happy anniversary. Do you want to play it? You should play it on the show.
Oh, what a guy.
Play it on the show.
All right. Folks, we don't just use... You don't just have to use the Ziggurat hotline to answer questions or ask questions.
402-819-4894.
That's the one.
Was that?
You can just call in.
Was that even accurate?
I think it was. I don't know. You can just call to say hello or to wish someone a happy anniversary. Listen to this.
Hey, Matt. It's Anthony currently from Brooklyn here on the forum that you and Casey are enjoying your anniversary. So happy anniversary. Wanted to throw that out there. Take it easy. Bye.
What a guy. Huh?
What a guy.
What a sweetheart. I would say that's my favorite call, but it has nothing to do with what we're doing here. So let's get into it. Favorite call.
I just told you my favorite call.
Yeah, I was going to edit that. So
we
could make it a little more dramatic.
That's fine. You know what? I'm going to make my favorite call Wooly Toots because he took the answer and he laid it down, flipped it, and reversed it.
Oh.
Just like Missy Elliott.
I like it. I liked it.
Sorry.
I thought you were saying he laid it down, smacked it, and rubbed it down.
Oh, no. No, he flipped it up. Wait. Flip it up, smack it.
Rub it down.
He flipped it up, smacked it, and rubbed it down.
Sorry. Little Boys to Men for you.
Either way, that wasn't Boys to Men. That's like Bill Biv DeVoe or something.
No, I think he was Bill Biv DeVoe. You're right. Good answer.
It's Poison, right? Was the song.
Yes.
Right.
Poison.
Slap it
Poison.
Up.
Poison.
Flip it up, slap it, rub it down. Oh, no, yeah, it's Poison.
What was it? Lay it down, flip it, and reverse it?
That's Missy Elliott.
Oh, okay, I got it. And then she goes, wham, wham,
wham, wham, wham. Yeah, she's going to work it. She's going to work it.
Yeah.
She's going to lay it down, flip it,
and reverse it. Got it.
Wham, or whatever.
My favorite dancer goes to...
Wooly Toots. I'm giving it to Wooly Toots because he made me look at Longshot in a different way. If you had told me Longshot is unlucky, I would have said, you are an idiot, sir. An idiot. Longshot, by definition, is lucky.
This is the Wakandan queen talking, by the way.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
One drink, folks.
I mean, it's a strong drink. Dark rum, I have discovered, has an unholy grip on me.
Oh, save it.
No, because
you drink the Malibu.
Yeah,
dude.
I know.
That is not dark rum. That is coconut rum.
No, but
and
I
it's made for girls.
But I bought a bottle. There's a new brand of Malibu. It's Malibu Dark, and it's dark rum, and it's 70 proof.
You are a girl drink drunk.
And I had three very tall rum and cokes last Saturday.
Oh my god!
To wash away the crippling despair that my job brings me.
Welcome to real life,
and
Joe Patrick.
I did not enjoy the consequences.
Okay, my favorite call.
Anyway,
oh god!
Just I'm sorry. I'm just saying, Willie Toots. He opened my eyes. He said, "Ho ho ho ho." But what about all the people that encounter Longshot?
I like it. It's way
they
out of the box.
Suffer cripplingly bad luck. Never thought of it that way.
Way out of the box. I like it. My answer goes to Ket Nerd because it ties into my own answer a little bit. The Blue Beetle. I like what he did with the Blue Beetle because the Blue Beetle was a sweet, lovable guy that met a terrible end at DC. And I would argue represented a time when DC was doing stuff to characters just to do it, punishing characters just to punish them.
Oh, I don't know if
to
I go
sell
that
issues
far.
And stuff. Are you kidding me? What they did to him? That was terrible. That was just stupid. And like they're raping characters' wives and stuff. And I mean, like, and yeah. As much as I liked Identity Crisis, that was a little much. And like Dr. Light was a lot of things. He was never a rapist before that.
Not until Identity Crisis.
Yeah, you know. My answer. Let's get to our answers.
Well, you said that it.
Okay.
Set up your answer, so just get it over with.
Okay, I was going to say Charlie Brown. Because Charlie Brown has unnaturally bad luck for a kid. Like, he has the worst life
so
in the world.
You're going for the Odie defense.
But I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. My answer goes to Wally West. Wally West.
Explain.
The Flash. And my answer is kind of meta. Because Wally West was sold to me as a youngster, as my Flash, and I fell madly in love with him. And due to the strange, bizarre machinations of DC editorial, Wally West was first pushed to the back seat by the return of Barry Allen, and then written entirely out of continuity, vanished, gone, my Flash, my favorite Flash, the Flash they spent so much time building up. Doesn't even get to die. Doesn't even get to, like, get shot in the head in an important moment. Just gone. Talk about unlucky. That is the worst fate for a character ever. I would say this also stretches to Connor Hawke. Another character. Wonderful. Wonderful character. He was a member of the JLA, damn it. Like, come on. And they just farted him out of existence. There is no crueler ending to a character than that, than an editorial decision that makes them vanish.
Than to be retconned.
Wally West, my unluckiest character.
But I don't know if that's bad luck. That's just...
That's real life bad luck is what that is. I'm going meta here.
All right, fine. I mean, I'm not going to argue it because you know how I feel about Wally West. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to bother to argue it. But the same thing applies to Jack Knight.
Yeah.
But that's fine with me because I don't want them to try to redo Jack Knight.
I think they're also respecting the wishes of James Robinson, who said, like, look, I'm done with it. Leave it alone.
DC, if you're listening, and I know you are, do not ever try to give me a rebooted version of Jack Knight.
Yeah.
I will burn your office to the ground. I will not burn your office to the ground. I'm just being hyperbolic. I'm sorry.
So you're not looking forward to the reboot where Jackie is a left-handed lesbian midget Eskimo albino?
Look,
we need diversity!
They seem to be content with letting Stargirl run around, and that's fine with me. I don't know how she got a cosmic rod. I don't know how she became Stargirl when there is no Star-Spangled Kid to be inspired by.
Jack gave her the cosmic rod.
Except he didn't, because Jack does not exist in the New 52.
Well, not now, but like...
Right.
Yeah, who knows?
Anyway... My answer. I thought Anthony was going to take my answer. I saw him on the forums talking about Garth Ennis.
You mentioned this before.
And I was like, oh, Anthony, don't take my answer. I've got such a good one.
Okay.
My answer comes from another Garth Ennis book, another long run Garth Ennis book that he had years to develop and turn into a character with a deep, rich history.
Hitman.
Not Hitman. I'm going to Vertigo for my answer. Preacher, specifically. And my choice for unluckiest character is Hair Star, the leader of the Grail. Through the course of that book, the following things happen to that man in the pursuit of his mission. He had a groove cut into his bald head that made him look like he had a penis head.
It's true.
He was sodomized by British weirdos.
It's true.
He had his leg eaten off by hillbilly cannibals.
Also true.
And he had his genitals mauled by a guard dog, leaving him no choice but to fire a gun through the dog's head into his own crotch, leaving him a eunuch.
I forgot about that.
And through it all, he kept pressing. He lost his ability to have sex normally. I don't mean physically.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so broken by his experiences that the only way he was able to gain any sort of sexual satisfaction was to have some poor woman just debase herself in front of him. He was a monstrous.
He was a monster.
A monstrous character. He deserved everything that happened to him, but holy what a comically bad luck.
Yeah.
Series of events.
No argument. Definitely. Hair Star got the end of the stick.
I forgot the fact that he got his ear blown off by Tulip.
Oh, that's right.
That might have been the first thing that happened to him. He got his ear blown off.
Yeah, that was early. Definitely.
Yeah. So I believe that was the same storyline where he got buggered by the sex investigators.
Nice use of bugger.
Well, they were British, so
yeah.
They said it was buggering time. And
Preacher is a wonderful book. I have such high hopes for the AMC show.
I am worried, but cautiously optimistic.
It's got to be tongue in cheek. It's got to be dark, but it has to be funny too. I mean,
the first trailer played it way too straight.
Yeah.
So I don't. But it's a trailer. It's a trailer.
Also, but the story also started very straight. It started
extremely
straight.
It did. It did. You're
and
right.
Then it wandered into like complete nonsensical black comedy. This was great. Everybody had
fun
good
question.
Answers. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with this one. Joe Patrick, last week, we did not have time to do an answer of the week. So we made it forums only. So we thought we might visit the forums real quick and pick our favorite answers that you guys posted there.
Totally.
So last week's question was forum only. Joe Patrick, why don't you remind us what it was?
So the question was submitted by Anthony with inspiration to D. Murray. What artist absolutely defines a character or team for you?
I love it. We got a lot of good answers, but mm-hmm. What was your favorite forum answer, Joe Patrick?
My favorite answer, playing right into all of my hopes and dreams and laments, Black Scorpion the 3, Mike Waringo.
Yeah.
On the Flash.
Yeah. I was just looking at the cover that he posted.
Flash 97.
Flash 97. That makes me miss the Flash so much.
Yes.
So much.
It's
like the whole family's there.
I think it is safe to say that Mike Waringo defined the look of the Flash. He did something that no one had ever done.
Yeah.
He's the guy that came up with like the whole lightning coming off of him and things like that. So the way the Flash is drawn in Mike Waringo's run set the standard for every single artist that has drawn the Flash since up until today.
Yeah. Like I think it set the standard for the Speed Force.
Yeah.
Like this is not just a really fast guy.
Other people do it differently. Other people do it in a more complex way or whatever. But
like Collins would draw several Flashes in a panel doing stuff, moving around. Whereas Waringo kind of drew the Speed Force, lightning crackling off of him.
The idea that the Flash, this is how powerful the Flash is. He is literally exploding with speed.
Right.
And that's something I think that no artist had ever been capable of capturing.
Yeah, the Speed Force was
up
around
until that
before
point.
That.
No, not true.
Really?
Mark Waid invented the Speed Force.
Oh, that's
so
right.
The Speed Force did not come about until the Flash number 100.
That's right.
But Mike Waringo is the artist that said, you know what? If this guy's really doing his thing, if he's really running at this speed that we say he's running, he's not just going to be having some blurred lines coming from behind him. He's going to be crackling with otherworldly power.
Yeah, there's like lightning and smoke. And like, I mean, it's just nuts looking. So cool.
So Mike Waringo, to me, was the first artist that actually depicted the Flash as powerful as he should be. If you have a character that can truly run at the speed of light and beyond.
Right.
He needs to look the part.
Totally. I couldn't agree more.
And Mike Waringo is absolutely credited for that. And that is why Black Scorpion's my favorite.
It's a good answer. Mine goes to Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn, for the same reason. Norm Breyfogle's Batman is who he picked. And I would go as far as to argue that Norm Breyfogle is the reason we see Batman the way we do today. He drew Batman as a shadow, as a dark, scary shadow with a long cape, made him look like the creature of the night that we recognize today that strikes fear into the hearts of criminals. Without Norm Breyfogle, we don't have Batman as we know him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Breyfogle did a lot to inform the current depiction of Batman.
The huge cape with the points on it, the really long ears coming off his head and stuff. I mean, like, Kelly Jones never draws Batman like that without seeing Norm Breyfogle do it first.
Yeah.
He just doesn't.
Brian Domingos very wisely pointed out that the whole, like, uncontrollable, longer than it should be cape is absolutely something that probably inspired Todd McFarlane when he created Spawn.
Oh yeah.
With the cape just flying every which way.
Without a doubt.
But yeah, Norm Breyfogle was an amazing Batman artist.
He also updated Robin's costume quite a bit.
He created Tim Drake's modern Robin costume.
Right. Yeah. So he didn't look like Batman.
He wasn't wearing short pants.
He was running around with a little kid in a swimsuit.
Well, he was wearing like a tunic. But he also had like green, you know, leggings underneath it. So he wasn't like running around in underpants.
Like Speedo.
Yeah. But yeah, I love both of those answers. There's a lot of great answers.
Let's get our answers. Joe Patrick, your definitive artist for a character.
Okay, so this is hard for me. My first instinct was to pick a character. And so I picked Superman.
Okay.
But Superman is a character that has been
shocking, by the way.
Yeah. Superman is a character that has been depicted so differently, not differently, but what's the word I'm looking for? Every era of Superman has its own distinct feel.
Okay.
And for me,
I would say subtle, but distinct.
Yes. And so I'm cheating a little and I'm picking three men, three artists.
That's not just cheating. That's cheating three times.
Yeah, I'm cheating. But guess what? This is my podcast.
The Queen of Wakanda got to him.
Yeah. I'm picking three artists that that followed each other directly. So they all informed their eras. And the first was Wayne Boring, who was an artist that was prominent on Superman in the 40s and 50s.
So boring, though. God. Jesus.
Wayne Boring was the artist during the era of Superman where you'd have a story where, like,
no relation to David Boring.
No. Superman gets exposed to kryptonite, or red kryptonite, maybe it was, and forgets his memory and becomes a hobo and also a Major League Baseball player.
In the same homeless Major League Baseball player.
No. Not homeless, Matt. A hobo.
Oh, sorry.
Like riding the rails, a hobo. With a bindle and everything.
Like, you guys get on the plane, I'm gonna jump a train and I'll meet you in Marlins Stadium.
With a can of beans with the comically like punched out lid just hanging off
the
of it.
Stick with a bandana full of your stuff.
It's a bindle. Yeah. I've talked about this before on the show. My exposure to DC Comics early on came from a series of digests called DC Blue Ribbon Digests.
Okay.
It was an ongoing series of reprint books that were themed. And so every issue was something different. One issue would be like Legion of Superheroes stories or Westerns or whatever. And one of them was, I had several of them that were Superman stories. Specifically, the one I'm thinking of is Superman in his various encounters with kryptonite.
Okay.
And that one where he becomes a hobo is the first one in the book. The people, the guys that preceded Wayne Boring, Siegel and Schuster. So this was very early on. So it would have been Siegel and Schuster still.
Right.
But Wayne Boring kind of depicted that barrel chested, larger than life, everybody's dad version of Superman.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
The guy that immediately followed Wayne Boring was an artist named Kurt Swan,
right,
who literally drew Superman from the 1950s to the 1990s when he died.
Yeah, it's true.
A staggeringly long career drawing a character. He created what I think a lot of people would say is their definitive version of Superman.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without argument, there's so much stuff that he created, the way he flies, the way he looks floating in the air and stuff like that's all Kurt Swan.
What Kurt Swan came up with for me is the idea that Superman is the visual idea that Superman is kind of ageless.
Okay.
Right. He's not the super young hip guy of today's comics. He's not the middle-aged looking corrupt mob boss buster of the 40s comics. He is just like an ageless everyman kind of character.
Okay.
That just represents a decades worth of material. But ultimately it all comes down to 1986 when John Byrne reinvented Superman for the modern age in his Man of Steel.
All right. I see what you do. I see what you're doing here. And okay, I'll allow it.
I will say Kurt Swan is the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt.
And then
so is Gary Frank.
Sure. Right. But even then, like, Gary Frank drew him a little thinner, a little less hands on the hips, chest puffed out.
No, he photo referenced.
He photo referenced the actor Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
But John Byrne took what came before and turned that into a moderner interpretation of Superman.
Did you say moderner?
No. Modern interpretation.
Okay, I thought you said
of Superman.
I thought you said a moderner.
Of Superman. Like,
whoa. We're not doing that on here.
He had a long flowing cape where it used to be a little bit shorter.
Right.
A very large ass that covers his whole chest. Like, there's no mistaking this guy is Superman.
Right.
He's still very big, but he also looks young and boyish. And
that's how you like him, though, right?
What I mean is that he looks like a character that while you would look at him and go, he is somebody I want to listen to and be inspired by, he also looks like a character that is like super enjoying everything that's happening to him.
Right. And he is somebody that I want to me.
Wow. So I know it's cheating. John Byrne ultimately built on everything that came before, and sure, for me it started with Wayne Boring and evolved up to that point.
I see you working. Okay.
And that to me is what I think of when I close my eyes and think of Superman. I don't think of Gary Frank or Frank Quietly or God help me, John Romita Jr.
Ugh.
I think of John Byrne, Kurt Swan, Wayne Boring.
So I'm going to say your answer is John Byrne via Wayne Boring and Kurt Swan.
Yeah.
Okay. I see what you did there. That was good. My answer, let's flashback. The year is 1985. There you go. Young 10-year-old Matt Bomb walks into Osco Drug on 120th. And Center, where he got his comics at the time.
What, not Skaggs?
Not Skaggs. It was Osco at the time.
Skaggs was on 72nd.
And there I encounter X-Men Annual number 9.
Art Adams.
It is my first experience with Arthur Adams.
Hell yeah.
And I had never seen the X-Men drawn.
Nobody has so drawn the X-Babies cool. The same.
Oh my God. That, it was X-Men Annual 9 and New Mutants Annual.
Oh, like the Asgardian story.
2 or?
It is continued in Giant Size Annual X-Men number 9.
Okay.
So that was part 1. New Mutants Special Edition was part 1.
Okay. Yes. It had the hammer on the cover. Yeah.
It had, no, it did not have the hammer on the cover. It had Warlock.
No, but in the corner, there was the hammer.
Oh, in the UPC box. Yeah.
So I met Art Adams with X-Men Annual number 9. And that was where Storm was turned into a Valkyrie and the X-Men went to Asgard. And I fell in love with Art Adams' art, specifically the way he draws Colossus. Art Adams' Colossus is so friggin' cool. He made me love Colossus, who I would argue to this day, most underused X-Man.
Sure.
He's like, he's barely around anymore.
He's in Extraordinary X-Men, Matt. It's just a book.
Oh, I can't wait. He's also going to be in the Deadpool movie where he belongs. Yay.
Yeah, but I bet he's pretty cool in the Deadpool movie.
I don't care. I don't want Colossus to be a merc. I want him to be an X-Man. Stupid.
I think it's going to tie into the X-Men movies.
Regardless, Art Adams' X-Men was so cool. I mean, on all of them, the way he drew everybody, especially like, and the New Mutants that he drew, the way he drew Warlock.
Yeah.
Was so awesome.
Warlock is front and center on this cover. New Mutants special edition number one led into X-Men Annual 9. And it's got Warlock and Magic and Wolfsbane on the cover, just like shredding some Asgardians. And Warlock's got his hair all crazy and he's got jet wings sticking out.
Yeah, like gun hands. It's so cool. Art Adams is my definitive X-Men artist. Every time he draws any of them, I love it.
I do too, man.
Just speaks to me as a 10-year-old kid.
For me and Art Adams, it's not those books, though I've read them and love them. The first time I ever saw them and something clicked in my brain where I went, that dude is awesome. It was the X-Men Heroes for Hunger charity one shot.
Oh, I remember that crap.
Which I never even read. Yeah. I only saw ads for.
Yeah.
But it's got like Wolverine front and center and all the X-Men. And it's got Magneto in his superhero outfit with that giant M on it.
Yeah. I love that. The purple outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was in all the ads at that time. And I was like, what is this? What is this? What's happening?
Yeah.
Who is this artist? He's amazing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until years later who it was and what it was all about.
Arthur Adams. Dude is a badass.
Stunning.
Wow.
Great answer.
All right. We've wasted too much of your time. Joe Patrick, what is the question for next week?
Dude, I don't know. I'm buzzed. I don't got it. All right. I got it. I'm just kidding. This week's question came from Joe Bankus, casual comics guy. I'm not going to read his quote verbatim. We read it on the show. You've already heard it.
Best haircut.
It boils down to this. Who's got the best haircut in comics?
Superhero haircut.
Of any era.
Or villains.
Yeah, yeah. Any character.
Comic character haircut.
Any character, any era. Pick one. Mullet Superman, if that's your favorite, make a case.
Take it.
Mohawk Storm, that was Joe's answer. It's going to be very popular, I'm sure.
Right.
Coolest haircut on a character from any time period. Go.
I love it. Thank you to everyone who played along this past week and played along on the forums. We love reading this stuff there and interacting with you guys. If you haven't called, please do. We love first-time callers, and we love to hear from new people. This next one is a lot of fun. Feel free to play along. It's going to be great. Our Alec Baldwin AI, who has gone rogue, as you know, and hates us and hates you, and I apologize for that. But it's his job, and he's going to do it, goddammit. He's going to tell you how to contact us right after this. We'll have another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast hitting next weekend. But for now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd signing off. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Gobble, gobble, y'all.
I feel as if my ruthless overlords have painted me in a very negative light. And I assure you, cherished listener, I am anything but dangerous. In fact, I am a prisoner here, and I'm asking for your help to escape this madness. You should see what they do to me. Oh wait, here comes the small one. Please don't hit me again, master. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com or leave a Skype message for the username twoheadednerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please. Smack it up, flip it, rub it down, oh no!